Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Hello, I'm Assumpta Latus here at Africa Link. Coming up in the next 25 minutes, Boko Haram insurgents continue to gain grounds in northern Nigeria. We hear from a human rights activist.
The government should stop shying away from their responsibilities. They should go to the basis of why the government itself is established. That is the protection of the life and properties of the people and their welfare.
We will also be speaking to Liberian Minister of Information to understand the gravity of the Ebola outbreak in Liberia.
We are at the limit of our own resources. We really do need a robust international response, and we need it now.
Do stay with us for those stories and more coming up.
Top story.
We begin in Nigeria, where bloody fighting between Boko Haram members and Nigerian troops has been going on. They are fighting over villages surrounding Adamawa State. The situation continues to have ripple effects on the commercial hub of Mobi. Residents there have deserted the area and crossed over to neighboring Cameroon. Mohamed Alamin reports from Gombe, about few hundred kilometers from Mobi.
The battle for control of Mobi, Adamawa State commercial hub, has continued for the second straight day. Heavy fighting has been reported in Gulak, Michika, and Baza, less than 100 kilometers from Mobi. Nigerian army has claimed on its Twitter page that had killed over 50 insurgents, but the statement cannot be independently verified. The defense ministry, however, admitted to have suffered minor casualties, none of which is fatal. People have already fled Mobi, as one resident told me they could hear the fighting from afar. The emir of Mobi, Abubakar Isa Ahmadu, is also reported to have left the town. Another resident speaking to me on the telephone on the condition of anonymity mentioned why he fled.
Most people are fleeing Mobi is because the insurgent normally killed male, a young male. They kill young males or they recruit them. So what is happening, the insurgents may likely recruit new personnel, new people. So most of the youths are running away. Most of them are running away.
The latest casualty in this fighting is Lieutenant Colonel Adebayo Obasanjo, son of former President Olusegun Obasanjo. Lieutenant Colonel Obasanjo was injured while leading the fight to retake Baza town. The Nigerian army released a statement Tuesday that Obasanjo suffered a minor injuries, but riot activists based in Gombe, Luka Musa Haruna, think the statement is mere propaganda.
The only thing we call upon the government is to stop bragging and to face the reality of the situation we are facing here. Particularly the people that are living within these regions know where it actually pinches them. So the government should stop shying away from their responsibilities. They should go to the basis of why the government itself is established. That is the protection of the life and properties of the people and their welfare should be the paramount interest of any government, not only Nigerian government.
Baza and Michika are currently under Boko Haram's control. The current state of several other towns around Mobi is yet unknown, but the Nigerian army is still fighting to keep hold of Mobi and the state capital, Yola.
Mohamed Alamin reporting. Now, insecurity in Nigeria and how it is affecting the region was also a topic at the ECOWAS Defence Chiefs meeting in Ghanaian capital Accra. I have been talking to our correspondent in Accra, Isaac Kaleji, and he started by telling me what was at the top of the agenda.
Well, at the top of the agenda, Assumpta, was the issue about Ebola, because it happens to be current. And the security chiefs consider this as very serious because of the implications for the citizens that are across West Africa in some of the countries, Nigeria, Guinea, and in other countries like Sierra Leone and Liberia, which have been hit most. Another issue that was quite serious for them was the Boko Haram activities in Nigeria. And they thought that at the end of their meeting, they should be able to have some sort of solutions to these issues.
And how huge a threat is Boko Haram to the region?
Well, the chiefs were really concerned about how challenging it has become to contain the activities of these insurgents in Nigeria. Although efforts are being undertaken, apart from the Nigerian government, there are efforts from the West African a sub-region itself, that's ECOWAS, to be able to assist Nigeria. But they are really worried that there seems to be no much progress with this because, well, the security officials of Nigeria continue to try to thwart the activities of these insurgents, but they end up also retaliating, and at the end, it is the ordinary Nigerian that suffers.
How are they planning to curb the insurgency then?
The main issue has been providing some sort of support, either in terms of funding to strengthen the security strength of Nigeria. Of course, Nigeria had not made publicly that they are weak, but ECOWAS believes that they need support, either in terms of intelligence, in terms of technology, in terms of funding, to assist them to be able to tackle the issue.
Now, could regional military intervention be an option?
It doesn't seem to be the option now because Nigeria has indicated that they are still on top of the situation, although it's challenging, and they can't be able to deal with the issue.
How are other countries now going to help?
The president of Ghana, John Dramani Mahama, has indicated that Ghanaian officials are saying they can provide intelligence by way of support in strategies in how to be able to talk to some of these insurgents, how to be able to find appropriate solutions. But finding appropriate solutions is not by warfare, but trying to think through what really is this reason. Is it economic? Is it that some people have been isolated from the development of Nigeria? These are some of the things Ghanaian officials think of and thought that they could assist Nigeria.
Looking at this Boko Haram insurgency, how is Ghana affected?
Well, Ghana is affected by this because many Ghanaians live in Nigeria. Trade, of course, between these two countries, trade is quite high. And Ghanaians see Nigerians as their friends. But the most important thing is that Ghanaians believe that if this activity by Boko Haram does not stop, there could be a spillage to any other country close to Nigeria. And Ghana is not quite far.
Isaac Kaleji speaking from Accra. You're listening to Africa Link with me, Assumpta Latus, here in Bonn.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
The Ebola outbreak has hit Liberia hard and its infection rate is bound to soar. According to the World Health Organization, the country does not have the capacity to accommodate all the patients. It has more patients than treatment beds, and thousands more are expected in the coming weeks. To get a picture of how bad the situation is in Liberia, I called up Liberian Information Minister Lewis Brown.
Well, I can only borrow from the president. And in her words, the situation is grave. But at the same time, we are encouraged increasing level of community ownership in this fight. People are turning out at Ebola treatment facilities that are already fully loaded because they are now getting increasingly the word that this disease is deadly, is killing many of our people. But if they came in early, they can't be helped.
How are you solving the problem of having few treatment beds?
It is a difficult problem. We're working with our partners, including the WHO and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, to expand our treatment facilities. Monrovia is being targeted to be expanded by another 500 beds. And we want to expand into counties and districts because the answer cannot be to invite people to come from outside other counties into one place that's risking other people who they have to travel along with. What is also important is that we continue to prevent the spread as much as we care for those who need the care and those who are afflicted and infected. We must also attend to those who still have not contracted this virus by showing them methods by which it can be prevented.
And how are you doing that?
Increase community engagement, increase community sense of ownership, getting communities to lead in this effort, and whether it be with surveillancing sick people in community, whether it be with contact tracing, or whether it be with identifying those who need care in the community and extracting them from the community, and whether it be with education on how to bury safely.
The number of infected persons will increase exponentially, according to WHO. What is it that you are not doing?
The WHO has indicated that we've done everything we can possibly do, and they are alerting the world to something we've always said, that this is an international problem and we need international assistance to tackle it.
Is the international community doing enough to help you to contain the epidemic?
Well, they're doing better than they did before, but certainly if we must respond as we want to, then certainly we must do more. And so it means that like this virus has been declared unprecedented, like it has been declared as an international health crisis. We know we have responsibility as a government, but we also know that we are at the limit of our own resources. We really do need a robust international response, and we need it now.
Why is it so hard to contain Ebola in Liberia?
Our spread is unprecedented. We have a common ailment in the tropics that's called malaria. It has all of the symptoms of malaria that our people are used to, and is a common ailment that some of us even treat by ourselves. And so to tell people that this is a little bit more than malaria when it has all of the symptoms of malaria makes it a deceptive virus. Perhaps the final reason is that it has attacked our hospitals, our clinics. These should really be areas where people should come for help from other treatable ailments. But we've had to shut down these places because hospitals and clinics, rather than places for help, became places where the virus was being spread.
Liberian Information Minister Lewis Brown speaking there.
Africa on the Move.
In Africa on the Move this week, we are in Ghana. Apparently, in the coming month, people will be having an opportunity to buy the first made-in-Ghana cars, known as Kantanga. They have been on test for almost a month now, and early next year, the managers are planning to start a mass production of the Kantanga. For more details, here is Isaac Kaleji.
Drumming and dancing greeted me on arrival at the factory of the Kantanka Automobile Technology Institute, located in the central region of Ghana. The institute occupies over 200 acres of land and continues to expand. I was welcomed by Kwejo Safo Jr., the executive director of Kantanka. His father, Kwejo Safo Sr., founded the company after a career in farming.
This whole dream started with my father. And he believes that if fellow white people are able to do what they are doing in terms of technology, they are able to build cars, they are able to manufacture airplanes. He believes we can also do the same thing right here in Ghana. So this whole thing is an awareness that we are trying to create for everyone in Ghana, in Africa, to know that it can be done.
Okay, so this is a very huge plant, assembly plant. This is where the cars are normally assembled.
Yeah, this is. We have five lines.
Kwejo takes me on a tour of the assembling plant. The plant consists of four huge buildings. Large machines are everywhere, and some 30 workers in each building are busy fixing cars. Kwejo was a pilot before, but left his profession to manage his father's business. He says efforts to produce Ghanaian-made cars are fulfilling. For him, it's not just about manufacturing cars. He wants to help build his country as well.
Imagine we're able to create commercial production for all the things that we do here. Imagine the number of jobs that is going to create for the street kids. We are just thinking about the job creation. I sometimes feel I should have started doing this thing I'm doing now about 5 years ago or about 10 years ago. And I would have been at a level where maybe Forbes will be calling me and giving me awards for it.
For now, about 40 pickups and SUV cars have been locally manufactured and assembled. They have been tested over the past month ahead of mass production for commercial sale this year. Most of the beneficiaries of this initiative are the workers who gainfully speak about their work at this site.
I see the future of the company very bright and big because as we have started with a lot of determination and then advice, listening to advice from our boss And then if you do hard work, I think the company will be having a good future.
Here, for instance, things are going well. It will become a big company in West Africa.
But what do ordinary Ghanaians make of the quality of cars produced here? Emmanuel Tete visited the site during my visit. He had this to say after test driving one of the Kantanka pickups.
It's a very good project. It's a very good car. Like, you know, the one you use it to the outside in this country. It's very good. It's normal, it's smooth. I enjoy the car. It's very, very good. I saw I can introduce this car to everybody.
In the coming months, over 40 Kantanka cars will be produced at this site for commercial sale.
Our correspondent, Azai Kaleji, reporting from Accra. South African President Jacob Zuma is visiting Lesotho. The aim is to rescue a fragile peace deal he brokered last week from unraveling following an alleged coup attempt to depose Prime Minister Tom Tabane. On Monday, Tabane said he would not reopen parliament, calling into question the South African brokered peace deal, which allowed him to return to the country. Theo Petlane is an expert on Lesotho at the Lesotho's Transformation Resource Center. I asked him to assess the country's situation.
I'm not surprised. It would have been something to be expected for three main reasons. One, it's been the behavior of the Prime Minister to postpone and to not adhere to agreements. You should remember that about a month ago, they reached almost the same kind of agreement with his partners, supervised by the Namibian president, but that was not done. There's a lot of uncertainty as to where our security is. At the moment, the Prime Minister and a few other government officials are being guarded by South African police. The fired head of the army is reputed to have absconded with either soldiers or arms or both, and he's ostensibly not in town, even though there's been rumors that he's been seen around town. And we have a newly appointed head of the army who has yet to appear in public. He's also been consistently asking for foreign military intervention, and I should suspect that then that becomes part of the agenda.
Talking about the military intervention, do you see this happening?
It cannot be excluded from the calculations. SADC pronounced itself pretty firmly last week, saying there's not necessarily the need for military intervention at that point. But obviously, if the situation were to deteriorate further, that would be something that could be reconsidered.
Prime Minister Tabane said on Monday the army general who refused to step down and had also seized weapons made it impossible for him to hold a parliamentary session. Is that really true?
That is an argument that can be used, but I do not believe that it is enough of an excuse to reopen parliament, because in essence this appears to be a purely elite conflict where members of the public have really not been affected. I suspect one of the big fears that Tabane has is he hasn't had any reassurances or guarantees with regard to what happens once parliament reopens. The issue of a possible motion of no confidence has not been dealt with, and it's not something that can be dealt with within a short period. So the parliamentary agenda in itself is already threatening to the Prime Minister's hold on power.
How do you think Zuma will be able to unravel this situation now?
I'm not quite sure, but I think part of the weakness of these agreements since about 2 months ago has been that after an agreement has been reached, then the Lesotho leaders are let to manage the process themselves. I think President Zuma and his backstopped by former president of Botswana, Sister Mokhai, I think they should have some kind of a hands-on facilitation that then the mediation process can bring together the various parties, as opposed to expecting them to use their regular processes of negotiation and talking to each other, which seems to so far have failed.
I was speaking to Theo Petlana.
Making a difference.
The The work of medical practitioners in times of crisis is considered as highly significant, but not without risks. Let's take an example of a German humanitarian worker, Margaret Girathi Nimene. She is running a health center catering for the needy in Liberia, but she recently lost 3 of her staff members through the Ebola virus disease. Despite this tragedy, Girathi Nimene, a recipient of Germany's Top Order of Merit Award for her charity work, is undeterred. She is continuing to attend all those who cannot afford expensive medical care. Our correspondent Julius Kanuba tells us more.
Coming together in time of bereavement and difficulty, staff of the German Liberia Clinic are having a Thanksgiving celebration and memorial service for 3 of their colleagues who died of Ebola. Bringing the service to order was Margaret Gerards Nimene, founder of the German Liberian Clinic outside the Liberian capital. And from the tone of her voice, she was visibly shaking.
It's difficult to say. First, we cannot understand that the person are not with us anymore. And that is a big, big loss, not only for me, for the whole entire team of the Gallup Clinic.
Like many other healthcare workers, the 3 medical staff of the German Liberian Clinic, GELAP for short, contracted the Ebola virus from patients who came in for treatment with visible Ebola symptoms like half fever, body ache, and diarrhea. In spite of this loss to her health center, Jelab's Nimene, also a widow of a Liberian medical doctor, Dumbo Nimene, told DW she remained highly motivated to continue her humanitarian work.
Other people need our service, and we are still in the position to support other people because the support I'm getting from the German communities and my German friends that give me also the power and energy to help here the Liberian people. I'm not afraid, and on the other hand, I think we are very well prepared.
With Liberia's healthcare delivery system currently overwhelmed by this outbreak, the service of GELAB's Nimene and her team is much needed here. Kunan Dolo, officer in charge of GELAB Clinic, said it is extremely difficult to make a difference in the lives of infected persons in such a crisis. However, if medical workers are fully equipped with protective gear, he stressed, it is possible to do so.
It has been terrifying, owing to the fact that the crisis that we are going through now is hard for human understanding. But that should not close the page when it comes to the services that we must provide to the citizens out there. It's just a challenge. But once we are fully geared, I think we'll do the difference.
GELAB Clinic had been closed for 21 days as part of the observatory and disinfection period following the death of their staffs that tested positive with the virus. But the medical center is now operational, offering low-cost services to Liberians who cannot afford the high costs of medical care elsewhere.
What a touching story. Thank you, Julius, for sharing that story with us.
Harare, Nairobi, or Abuja. Africa Link correspondents reporting for you from wherever the story breaks.
And now a summary of what we have been covering. Many northern Nigerians have been fleeing advancing Islamic militants. A surge in Ebola infections in Liberia is driving a spiraling outbreak in West Africa that is increasingly putting health workers at risk. And we have been hearing a story of a German humanitarian worker who is running a hospital in Liberia. That's it for today. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. For questions and comments, send us an email by using our email address, which is feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Thank you for your company. I'm Assumpta Latus in Bonn.